I'm joined by Mary Ann and Ken Dupong. They are the parents of Michelle Dupong. And I just briefly heard a comment you made, Mary Ann, about how Michelle continues to teach you. What did you mean by that?
Well, Michelle was a very simple person. She didn't make things complex. I don't know, maybe it was her vision. She was a great organizer, a great leader, but always quietly in the background doing things, not in the forefront so much. And I know a lot of the stories shared today, and even in the documentary, they'll say, well, she was a real goof off and all real. I think from when we knew her as being young, I thought of her more of being an introvert and quiet and shy. But I know when she was called on mission with Jesus and wanting to do more for him, she knew she had to put herself out of her comfort zone to put out, engage people and make it joyful. She knew they were attracted to joy. So for me, my personality is much more serious. And I would say I would aspire to be more joyful. Yeah. And Michelle really radiated joy and encountering people. And that attracted so many to her. Also, her trust, her complete trust that God would take care of her and the plan. And as we see things unfold with this cause, which is so amazing to us, sometimes we think, oh, we should do this, or this should go this way, or, you know, how can we help? And to remember to get, not to be in charge, let Jesus do it.
Right.
Trusting in the way he's going to make things unfold.
Yeah. I know, I just watched a documentary, and that's what came through to me, is just her surrender in all in that illness. And that just seemed a heroic part of her life, for sure, to me, it seemed. But there's that beautiful scene in the documentary where you dance with her briefly. Can you describe that? What was that, the setting for that? Or?
Well, we were trying to get Michelle home, and they couldn't do anything more at the cancer treatment center, but we didn't want her to be in a place down in Chicago. We wanted to get her home, but to get her home, we checked into flying someone like that in like a regular plane. It would cost like $35,000 to for all the special care that they would need. And to get her, she would have to walk. I mean, she'd have to be up and be able to walk. And at that point, they had put her on, like, I don't know if it was morphine drip. Anyhow, she really was not coherent. But then the doctor, he took it off. He took it off, and he was trying to help us too. And when, like, being off of it like overnight, the next morning she could correspond, talk to us, and she, I know when the doctor came in, she says, "Hello, Dr. Leo," and then we thought if she would want to try standing up, because she couldn't get out of, we couldn't take her out of the bed because of, they said you
a
can't, it's
hazard.
A fall hazard that she might fall and get hurt. And anyhow, with the doctor there, we Mary Ann played a song, and we said, "Michelle, can you stand up would want to dance a little bit or show the doctors that you can get around." Anyhow, that's what happened.
Dr. Leo recorded that.
She stood
up. Sent it to all the hospital staff.
Wow.
First off, just look at this. They didn't expect her to live. At that point, just the previous week, she had gone into a respiratory arrest, and she had been put on a breathing tube.
Right.
And they had sedated her heavily and told us she has less than a 1% chance in coming out of this. And that was at Thanksgiving time.
Yeah.
Get all your family here. She's not going to make it.
Right.
But amazingly, when he took off the breathing tube,
mm-hmm.
she started responding. Her voice was starting to come back yeah. in a day
well,
or
could,
so.
She could breathe. I mean,
and she could breathe on her yeah. own, and he was amazed. He said, this is a miracle that she mm-hmm. never expected her to be able to do this. But then we were in that position of, yeah. what do we do next? Yeah. We know we can't help her here.
Right.
And we don't want her to die in Chicago. So what can we do to help get her back to North Dakota?
Yeah.
So then after that, after she was able to stand up and walk around a little bit, then Father Cheney, he's the priest from the Newman Center at Fargo, he was able to rent a plane, and he flew down to Chicago and picked us all up. It was a fairly good-sized plane. Yeah. There was, I don't know if, there was how many of us? Five or six?
No, there was just...
Well, Renee.
Five of us.
Renee, yeah. Michelle, Marianne, yeah. and myself, and Father Cheney. Yeah. Anyhow, he flew us home then.
Yeah, we had to
pay for the gas.
It was a big blessing.
It was just, Father came through again. It's just, he flew her down at the beginning to... Rochester she first was diagnosed,
right.
also, but yeah, he got us home, and that was just a huge blessing.
Yeah. Well, Marianne, I want to ask you: is there particular moments, poignant moments of like faith that you saw in Michelle that touched you, or something spiritual like that? I know the suffering just seemed so terrible, overwhelming. I'm sure every day was a drama in some ways, but were there moments of like faith that you remember that?
Well, like I did mention in the documentary, the amazing thing was her responses to the news of her mm-hmm. having stage 4 colon cancer and her abdominal cancer, and that you have 2 months, and she just did not seem alarmed.
Yeah.
She just accepted it and was not in any way panicky or why me or what can we do? You know, is there any, it was me asking those kind of questions. But as far as her faith, the great, and this isn't in the movie, but when we were airlifted to Mayo, and her and I were alone at the hospital. We were waiting for the rest of the family to fly in or drive in from North Dakota. It was New Year's Day. And in the room, there were a couple things she shared. And she said, Mom, I'm just so grateful that you and Dad raised me in the Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm.
That we had such a blessing to have our faith in times like these.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful for having a family to share in all of this. And she made a comment about when she thought about it, and you could see in her quiet time, she's reflecting. I have 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be ready for Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, I am so grateful that I never compromised my purity. That meant a lot to her. When she was on college campuses with her ministry work, she often would have talk sessions with guys and gals regarding purity, modesty, encouraging the students, save yourself. The Lord will bless your faithfulness.
Right.
And she said, I'd never compromised in high school or college or even as a young adult, my virginity, and I'm so grateful. I have no regrets. And that was so comforting for me to hear.
Yeah.
But then it was just, again, a reflection of how she, lived her life and was trying to lead others along that path. But then she also commented too on other things. She said, I have two regrets. One of them was that I ever judged people. I know I've grown to understand we don't come from the same backgrounds, the people you encounter. And so often just by a visual glance at someone, you make a judgment. I'm better than them, or I would never hang out with someone like that. Or, you know, she said, you never know their background, their circumstances. Right. They may not have come from a loving family. They might have been abused. And so I regret any time that I would have judged someone. I wish I would have been more kind in that. I never witnessed her doing that, but she knew faults, I guess, at points, at different points in her life. And the other thing she said, I remember so many times hearing people say, I have cancer, and she'd say, I'll pray for you. I'll pray for you, you know, Lord. She said, now I wish I would have done more.
Right.
She said, I realize now a cancer diagnosis, any serious diagnosis, it's not affecting one individual, as bad as that is, but it affects everyone in the family.
Yeah.
We're all in this journey and battle and trauma together. Say, so I wish I would have reached out to people more. I wish I would have made more meals for them. I wish I would have offered more rides. I wish I would have gone to the hospital and held their hand and just be there, not say anything, just be there in their presence. So she quickly analyzed these thoughts in a matter of a couple of days.
Yeah.
Again, that would be Michelle. She's, I have to be ready to go at any time. And she's reviewing her life.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast with Lise, your daughter Lise.
Lisa.
And it struck me. I mean, she has a strong faith, came through. I guess it clicked with me. I talk about it in the documentary, but the support the family was, and what a role. I mean, to see that she made it 12 months, to have that kind of support that you all gave her, it seemed like the whole family just rallied around her. Well, Mr. DuPont, would you wish something could be added to the documentary after? I know you can't capture somebody's life in 45 minutes, but was there something you thought, I wish they would have put that in there?
Oh gosh. There's a couple times where I know one time she came out of one of the tests, and I think this was at Mayo Clinic, and she said Jesus told her that he was going to heal her. And she asked him, in this life or the next? And he said, in this life, but first you must suffer much. And that kind of carried us as a family through the whole year. We trusted somehow God is going to heal her. We didn't know what he was going to do. There were so many things that every few weeks things just would get worse and more complications, and we just, gosh, somehow Jesus is going to heal her. We don't know what he's going to do, but another thing she asked him when that happened, she says, how do I know this is you, Jesus? And he said, Michelle, you know my voice. And it was from her prayers, all her spiritual life, of how she would basically communicate with Jesus.
Yeah.
It's just an adoration. That's one of the things. And I just think of... then during that same time when he said he was going to heal her, he also told her that he wanted her in the garden with him. And we just thought, my gosh, we know which garden that is.
Yeah.
It's like the first sorrowful mystery, like the agony in the garden. And just over the year, you could just follow the sorrowful mysteries. And then toward the end, when she was on that breathing machine, when she was able to get off of that, then she told the deacon, we didn't hear it from her, but she told the deacon that when she was on that machine, she saw herself hanging on the cross with Jesus.
Really?
And she said, it hurt so bad. And she wanted him to take her. And he said, it's not your time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the last mystery, the crucifixion. It's just, and there's so many times through the year about where you could relate the carrying of the cross or the crowning with thorns. I mean, it's just, there was so much that went on. It's like when you see the documentary, you see clips of the year, you know, but there's so much in between that through the year, the suffering. And and she just, I know one time she told me if there would be a time when she wouldn't hurt, you know, that it's just every time she'd move, or even not moving, it'd just be pain. And at one point she had like 6 tubes coming out of her. And yeah, 2 of them in her sides and 2 in her stomach and 1 in her back. And yeah, it just, and the doctor said every breath she'd feel it. I mean, it's just, it's just a hose coming out of your side. And
your own faith in watching that, I would think that would be such a trial for your own personal faith, right?
Well, yes, but it was like the trust, like when Jesus said he was going to heal her, it's like somehow, we don't know what he's going to do, but we trust that somehow he's going to heal her.
How do you understand just, that today?
Well,
you probably thought about that a lot.
Well, we got to the point. Well, even, you know, a week before she passed away, somehow we know Jesus can do miracles, and somehow somehow we trust he's going to do something.
Yeah.
But then she passed away, and it's like, what happened, God? You know, you told her you were going to heal her, and now she's gone. And that was like the trial then, like what happened. But then there was a woman that got, she tore her knee up and she got healed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they did MRIs and said there's no way it's going to heal, the ligaments are torn. So they scheduled a surgery for her to repair it. And she prayed, this woman prayed to Michelle for her intercession. And within a couple days, the swelling went down and she could walk, and she said the pain went away.
Wow.
And she went to the doctor and told him, like, I don't need this surgery. And he says, well, I have the MRI here, and you need it. It isn't going to heal on its own. And she, I can walk and I can do everything. And he says, well, can you bend down and put her through stretching things? And he says, well, I don't know what happened. This is a miracle. I just, it won't heal on its own. There's no way. It's tore ligaments. And anyhow, this woman went back to the adoration and thank God for what he did and for Michelle interceding. Yeah. And she heard Michelle tell her then that the Father completely healed me. Mm. And that was like our answer.
Oh.
The Father did heal Michelle.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't how we thought.
Right.
It was like taking her to heaven.
Right.
But
there were other signs sooner. Yeah.
Well, and even before that, the next day we were praying in our living room, the rosary, and we just finished. And our oldest daughter started crying, Lisa. And I said, "Lisa, what's wrong?" And she says, "Michelle told me it's beautiful up here."
She asked just for like, a sign. She said, "We know where you're going, but we want a sign."
It was just like the next day. I mean, she just, that was like, she's up there. She's with Jesus.
And it's hard because we understand purgatory and the purging that needs to happen for souls.
But we just knew the suffering. She went through so much suffering, and I thought if there's any candidate to go straight to heaven, it's her. Yeah, I mean, what she went through. I thought with that suffering, we don't have a chance if she can't.
Well, there were a lot of errors that happened, procedures the hospital actually in one time came and apologized because there was a major screw up here.
Yeah.
She ended up in the hospital, I would say at least another month because infections of something that was not done correctly. And the nurse that was in charge of the mistake felt so bad and removed herself. She did not want to see Michelle because she felt very guilty. Yeah. Michelle wrote her a letter and said, "You're human, anyone can make a mistake. I don't hold this against you, you're a very good nurse. Don't, please," because she asked to be removed from ICU. Mm-hmm. She forgave her. Wow. I've never heard of a patient getting something majorly screwed up and writing a thank you, please come back. I forgive you. It wasn't your fault, we're all human.
Yeah.
So that was a beautiful testimony of her. But even, I think, with her promise of wanting to go to heaven, she wore her scapular. She was very faithful to all the devotions she ever heard about. I mean, she was First Fridays, First Saturdays, Divine Mercy Chaplet Novenas. That's what they talked about today about going to the cemetery. She was always praying for the poor souls, the 9-day novena at the beginning of November for the poor souls. She had a very simple faith. If Jesus and Mary could come and give us this message that we should say the rosary, that we should wear the scapular, that we should say this Divine Mercy prayer for poor souls that are dying, why wouldn't you do it? It's a no-brainer. You know, do it. And she had that simple faith.
Mm.
So the promise with Mary, if you do the First Saturdays, is a Sabbatine privilege. I will come for you on the first Saturday after your death.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she died on Friday night at 11:23.
Oh, wow.
And she wore her scapular, had done the, from young on, grade school, first Saturday devotions all through her adult life.
Oh, wow. Wow.
That was a great consolation for us already there. I know one other thing that I wish in the movie they, and I know they had a time restriction that they didn't want it to be too long, but there is more to the recording of her talking about the Thirst Conference and inviting people where we originally received. I didn't know she had made the recording when she was promoting it, but she had sent it out to all the parishes to encourage the DREs and the priests. Please bring your people, bring them. This is a opportunity that our people in Northwestern North Dakota had not been exposed to.
Right.
So she was inviting them, and think about who can you invite? It will be life-changing for them. It could be the first time to hear about Jesus. You bring the non-Catholics, bring the Catholics, fallen away family members.
Yeah.
She wanted everyone there, and she did a beautiful recording, and it was about 10 minutes, I believe. And like, well, we had no idea. But then after she passed away, a good number of years later, a seminarian said, did you know this was recorded? Uh-huh. And there, they took just a little bit of that clip.
Oh, right.
In the documentary where she's talking, so you actually hear her voice.
It's so, yeah, it's so comforting just seeing her there talking. And,
yeah.
And
the energy. Yeah, she's sitting in the church, isn't she?
Yeah, she's sitting in the cathedral. She was recording that.
Yeah. I've enjoyed listening to her podcast that she, when she worked for the diocese. And,
yes.
And the way she says things, it's simple. But she talked about ordinary holiness. And it was like two or three sentences, you know, but I've heard that since I entered the community, right? Mother Angelica echoing Vatican II, universal call to holiness. I've heard that a million times. Something about the way Michelle said it, I said, well, I can do that. You know, in my life, I can respond to grace and let his love work through me. You know, I can, you know, it's possible, you know, and there's something about the conviction, the way she says things on those podcasts to the DREs or whoever she was talking to, it was really, you could see her faith. And it just, I thought it was an exemplary faith. You know, she really believed this stuff. You know, she's talking.
There, we listened to a podcast just this past Christmas. Mm-hmm. She was talking about evangelizing.
Yeah.
And she was at some, I don't know where the talk was made, mm-hmm. but she was just going through what it takes and evangelizing. She was talking about how many people are in North Dakota and how many priests we have and how many people per priest that is to evangelize. And she's putting in a perspective where we, the laity, have to evangelize.
Right.
We can't leave it up to the priests.
Right.
We got to do it.
Right.
And she goes through this whole talk, and it's just so, it's just so encouraging. Like, yeah, we all have to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, and you don't have to be an expert.
Yeah.
You just share. You just plant seeds.
Right.
Yeah. You just do little things, and God. Well, it's like in the documentary, the one priest, Father Eckrich, when he said another thing about him, he said she would invite him to stuff, and he would, no, I don't have time. He'd always come up with excuses that he couldn't go for a Bible studies or whatever. And finally, he said, he ran out of excuses and he went and he said, my gosh, these are normal people at these Bible studies. I mean, it's not just crazy people. I mean, it's normal people. And then he said he contributes his priesthood to Michelle, introduced him to Jesus and Jesus did the rest.
I think women have a very important role in the church like that to, like Mary Magdalene, to come back and shake the apostles, he is risen. I think Mother Angelica did that, and I just see that repeated in life. But I know,
but
we
just but just little stories like that.
Yeah.
And then another one we had where she's talking about everybody will be or can be a saint.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you're going to accidentally all of a sudden Jesus is going to. And she says in her documentary, like, Michelle Dupont, you're a saint, you know, and it's not going to be a accident. I mean, you have to work for it. Yeah. You have to commit your life to
just
wanting to be a saint. Yeah. And it's just interesting listening to her talk, you know, like, it's just Michelle.
That's your daughter. That's the faith you planted in her. But thank you so much for giving us time here. And I know you have another place to be, but I'm going to keep following her story, but thank you for your witness. Mm-hmm.